Well, let's ask our next guest, Steve Cangalosi, New Jersey Devils play-by-play man for MSG Network. Hey, Steve.
Good afternoon, guys. How you doing? We're not used to this. This has a big-time feel of an event tonight on a Wednesday in October, which is great to experience tonight.
Yeah, it's a reversal of a lot of feelings going into games last season, I'm sure, for you. Not just the two wins, but the 10 goals over two games. Yes, is this really what we should expect from this Devils team going forward? High-powered offense.
Well, they scored 6 goals in a game just once all of last season. That was March 16th in a victory over the Flyers. So the fact that they have done that in one of their first two games this season obviously catches a lot of attention. Let me just start off with a cautionary tale, though, okay? It was only 3 years ago. This was the last season that Pete DeBoer had coached the team, that the Devils started out with 11 goals in their first two games. And there was something of a similar buzz at the start of that season. Was it sustainable? Well, let's put it this way. By Christmas, DeBoer was fired, and the Devils finished 28th in scoring in the National Hockey League. Now, with that said, they're showing signs that they're much more creative. They're much more youth-driven than they are right now. And I think the simplest way to assess what we've seen in the opening two games, this has been a lot of fun to watch. And I know you guys brought Nico into the conversation. 19-year-old Jesper Bratt has been the most eye-opening person on this team to watch over the first 120 minutes. He's been terrific.
Yeah, tell us a little about that guy. Because he's a relative unknown in the hockey world right now.
Yeah, 6th-round pick, 162nd overall back in 2016. Now, he was playing in Sweden, so he was an unknown commodity playing for AIK over the last 4 years. The Devils had seen enough out of him and loved him enough through scouting that they signed him to a 3-year entry-level deal in May. At the development camp, he was lights out. In training camp, he was lights out. And now to see him produce 5 points in the first two games of the season sort of backs that up. And a little history here. This is the first player in franchise history to collect 5 points in the first two games of his NHL career. And the thing that I've gotten from the veterans, fellas, is this. That kind of thing, it could be infectious. He's a good kid. He's got a lot of enthusiasm. And this core group, this veteran group, let's face it, there have been very few reasons to smile during this 5-year playoff drought. And so far, they're feeding off this. Now, we get real here by saying this is the greatest test of the early portion of the season tonight. They know the Maple Leafs, at least offensively, are on a far different level than the two teams that they've played so far, victories over Colorado and Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, it must be encouraging, though, to be a Devils fan and see the Maple Leafs and play them and say, listen, that's what happens when you get a first overall pick. That's what happens when you build a little bit through the draft and you hit on some younger players and you play with speed. You can turn a franchise around a lot more quickly than you've been able to, say, in years past.
It's just refreshing, I think. And maybe they're going to leave something on the defensive end here in the process of addressing those things. Again, it's been a fun team to watch, but I'll be the first one to say, if you watch the two wins that they've had so far, and yeah, it's nice that they've outscored the opposition 10-3 over the first two games. They have been far from perfect in the first two games, though, as well. There were a lot of odd man rushes, and they surrendered 41 shots in the victory over Colorado on what was opening day for the team. And truth be told, Monday versus Buffalo, the Sabres were simply a mess in their own end. But I think the difference is here, the Devils capitalized on those opportunities. And Ben and JD, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Devils have 4 points for the simple reason that their offensive skill in the first two games and finishing ability got them those 4 points. There were a couple of warts in those first two games, but their finishing ability and their shorthanded play, they've produced a shorthanded goal in each game, has been tremendous.
Yeah, it's, again, you don't want to overreact to two games against not the same opposition that they're going to face tonight at the Air Canada Center, but if you can score and you've got a goalie like a Corey Schneider, it feels like that's a pretty good recipe to do a 180 one season to the next.
Well, Corey, to me, is the most important thing going into this season. I think the youth and the development of a number one overall pick by Heisher, and if they develop another couple of young guys along the way, that's wonderful. But Corey Schneider, who's been very good, by the way, in the first two games of the season, he changed his strength and conditioning program over the summer. And it's nice seeing him rewarded for what was a year that, quite simply, fellas, he just wants to forget. He played 60 games last year. He knows he wasn't good. It was the highest goals against average, the lowest save percentage of any full season that he's played in the National Hockey League. Now, there's been an X factor here. They brought in Roland Melanson, his former goaltending coach in Vancouver, to work with him. They've gotten back to some things that the two of them worked on in Vancouver when he won a Jennings Trophy alongside Roberto Luongo. So that partnership, at least in the early going, there have been positive reviews on that. I'm one who's firmly convinced that Corey has put the single worst year of his professional life behind him. And if he gets back to not only the level where he was, but the level where he wants to be, which is a world-class goaltender, then that could be the tipping point for this franchise, getting back to a postseason maybe a little bit sooner than a lot of people thought going into this year.
I read that Brian Boyle is progressing, and it feels like he's might be getting close to joining the team. Do you have a read on when you expect him to be at least back at practice?
He's not on this road trip, and the Devils have back-to-back games on Friday and Saturday. Now, he's been part of the team, being weaved into the fabric of the locker room over the last couple of days. And when we played the opener on Saturday, he did skate with the team, although not with a full practice on Friday on what was the eve of the Devils' season. Reading the tea leaves here, guys, and that's all I'm doing right now, is that he probably feels he's ready to start contributing. But I don't think that that will happen for him until he gets two or three full practices with the team under his belt. So in a long-winded way to answer your question, I think the earliest that this would be addressed is next week. The Devils have a back-to-back next week against Ottawa and San Jose. So that's Thursday and Friday, late next week. If he keeps progressing the way we believe he is progressing, then I think there's a chance for late next week. But that's speculative on my part.
Talking to Steve Cangelosi, New Jersey Devils play-by-play man for MSG Network. It's the Devils and it's the Leafs tonight at the Air Canada Center. So what can you tell us about the early returns on Nico Heisher, the number one pick overall in the NHL draft? He had that pretty impressive preseason highlight. We're still waiting to see it through two games in the regular season.
Yeah, but he has looked good, guys. And I think Corey Schneider put it best when assessing Nico today. And this is a direct quote from Corey this morning. He is not looking to cheat the game and pick up points. He has a sense of where he needs to be and when he needs to be there. And I think that's a pretty nice compliment coming from somebody whose favorite player when growing up was Pavel Datsyuk. That's one of the men he emulated when watching the game from abroad. Now, that's a very high standard that he would hope to attain someday, but I think you get the sense of what he appreciates as a player in that commitment to a two-way game. He was outstanding on opening day against Colorado. He did not get a point that day, but he did reel off four shots pretty quickly. And then in game two against Buffalo, he did have a pretty pass for his first NHL point. He threaded the needle to Brian Gibbons in front of the net to get his name on the score sheet. So it's been good. I think the thing that jumps out is that the injury to Travis Zajac, which can hurt the Devils in so many ways because he's such a good two-way player, means that Nico is being thrust in a top six role probably a little bit sooner than anybody thought he would. How he handles that, and this is going to be a big litmus test, by the way, for him, guys, this week, because with Austin Matthews as a top-line center for Toronto, obviously, they get Washington on Friday. That means a lot of Nicklas Backstrom potentially that he will see. How he handles this grind, I think, is the most fascinating thing. But the Devils have not been reluctant to put a lot on the shoulders of a kid that I think we tend to forget, with all the hubbub now surrounding a number one overall, is only 18. I don't think they're worried about point accumulation here for Nico. Right now, they just enjoy very much and respect what he's brought to the table for the first two games. All of the reads on Nico Hischier for the first two have been very good, even though he's waiting for the first goal. Who knows how quickly that'll come? Maybe tonight.
Maybe.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, all the returns, though, otherwise, for this Devils team through two games, pretty good. 2-0 as they play the Maple Leafs tonight at the Air Canada Center. Steve, thanks so much for this.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a great afternoon. It's great being in the city.
Yeah, you man, too. You too, and have a great call tonight.
There's Steve Cangelosi. He's very happy to be joined now by Luke Fox. You know him on Twitter at Luke Fox Jukebox, sportsnet.ca. Hey, Luke.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. You headed down to the game today?
I am, yeah. I just got back from the morning skate.
What can you tell us from the morning skate?
What can I tell you?
Yeah, tell us something. Drop some knowledge.
Kyle Palmieri is good enough to go, apparently, for the Devils.
better stuff. Where's the
better stuff?
And did you put the bad stuff first?
James Van Riemsdyk gets really uncomfortable talking about his contract year. I could tell you that. He was fired with a bunch of questions about that, and he gave the kind of the take that will take care of itself, and all he has to do is focus and play hard and score goals like the one that nicked off his skate and against the Blackhawks the other night. So he didn't really like that line of questioning, but it's not going to go away anytime soon.
We got
a battle of two undefeated teams, believe it or not, tonight, so it should be a fun one.
Back-to-back seasons, first overall picks, lots of intrigue for this. Last thing on JVR there, though, quickly. Ben and I were talking about before you came on just about how Bozak and JVR, it's probably going to increase at some point this season, the discussion about them. I'm surprised that it was today at practice that people were talking to James about it, but it does kind of suck for him knowing that. Like, it does seem that he's genuine in his desire to stay here. There's been multiple reports that he likes it here, that he wants to be here. We were referencing the point that Elliot made that maybe they could explore something about a TJ Oshie-like deal where he takes a lot less per year but stretches it out over a long period of time. But if you look just down the wing for this team, it's just impossible to envision a situation where anything for him makes sense financially, and he probably just ends up getting forced out.
Well, this is the summer that he can really strike it rich, right? Like, Oshie got paid very nicely. Alexander Radulov got paid very handsomely. And by my calculations, I think JVR is going to be the most valuable scoring winger on the market this summer. So it's his chance to really knock it out of the park. Now, that doesn't mean that he doesn't want to stay with the Leafs, doesn't love being part of this team. I fully believe he does. He's told me that point blank. But it's just a case of dollars and cents. And if he wants to stay, he's going to have to take a serious hometown discount, so to speak. And that's hard to ask a guy, because this is probably his one chance to really set himself and his family up for the rest of his life. So you got to think Patrick Marleau took some of his money by signing 6 point whatever for the next two seasons. He plays the left side like JVR, and you got to think a bit of the money that may have gone to JVR got eaten up by Marleau. And we talk about the depth the Leafs have on the wing, but really it's mostly the right wing, their left side, which is why they'll probably keep JVR for the playoffs, unless someone throws that right shot defenseman that no one's really going to offer them. So I see him staying for the end of the season, and it's because the left side is a bit weaker. You know, yes, they have JVR and Marleau, but then you get into Hyman and Martin, and those guys aren't scorers.
You said you see him staying till the end of the season. My goodness.
I don't see,
they're not trading either he or Bozak before the end of the season, are they?
I wouldn't think so. Unless they got, I think they'd be open to it if a crazy offer came across the table involving a defenseman, but I don't see that happening. So I think they're going to take, there's worth in keeping them and making a good go of it. This is a close group. JVR and Bozak, they've meshed well with Marner, and that line is clicking. So So there's no reason to disrupt it.
Yeah, and not to mention, the only way that you'd be giving up a defenseman that's of any worth is that you thought that it was a salary dump if you were a team. You were trying to get rid of a contract and be willing to take on JVR, because what's the point of trading for him when he is a free agent? You don't know what he's going to command you. Plus, just from the Leafs standpoint, it's very hard to envision a way that they would get better by trading either of those two guys this season. You can talk me into something next year where they look better without the two of them, or that they can take a step because of internal progression, but right now, no chance. That's not happening. That was visited in the offseason with the Hamonic deal, but now that we're actually in it, I think that it's pretty much set in stone. And you know what? Do you even think that the defenseman that everyone talks about, that right-handed shot, the one that the organization wants to bring in, the stud guy, it feels more like the possibility of bringing in somebody that is right-handed but more of a depth guy would be more realistic at this point. And I wonder if Morgan Rielly's play earlier this season and remembering the upside of this guy has quelled the desire to go out and try to acquire that number one guy right away for this team.
Yeah, well, I just think the price of that number one, like when we say number one guy.
It's not even price, it's availability.
I don't think there's 31 number one guys, right? Like, yeah. Are we talking about the Doughtys and the Brent Burns of the world? Like, they're just not out there. So, yeah, they're developing Rielly, they're developing Gardner, and those guys look to be taking on their way. You know, it's super early, but look to be taking another step this year. But with Connor Carrick going down to injury, he's the right shot. You just realize how thin they are on the right side. Now they got, you know, of the three pairings that'll play tonight, you got two all lefty pairings. And the coach isn't happy with that. They want a right shot. But I think they'll be good enough and patient enough that this might be something they look at the deadline. And the name I've really been thinking about is Mike Green, just because he's on an expiring deal and no one has very high hopes for the Detroit Red Wings being a contender in 2 months' time. They're off to a decent start, but you know, the thought is that the way things shake out, they could be near the bottom of the Atlantic standings. And you wonder if you know, the Leafs don't make an offer for him on a rental basis, you know, just for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about their cache of picks and young players, right? Like, it's incredible depth, but yeah, it feels like this is the year that you're going to push some of those to the middle of the table and try and acquire an asset at the deadline instead of throwing things overboard.
Yeah, I mean, I think the moment they signed Marlowe in the offseason, it was like, it's go time. So yeah, I think, you know, some of the draft picks and prospects that they've been stocking up, I think, you know, they might have to dip into that pool, you know, later. You know, I would be surprised if it happened in the next couple months, but I mean, really close to the deadline, I think they'd be willing to dip into some of the assets that they've acquired in the past few years in order to get a play now guy.
All right, so we just discussed that we think Bozak and JVR are playing the rest of the season with this team. It would take something pretty astronomical for them to move off those guys before their free agency. And then you take your chance at free agency, but we know the dollars are going to be tight with all those young players looking to get paid. Up the middle, what do you see happening with this team as far as center iceman? Is William Nylander eventually, is the plan still, is there still a scenario where he ends up in the middle of the ice?
Yeah, I don't think this year, but yeah, I think long term, I think there's high potential for that. Already, Babcock's been using Nylander and Matthews almost equally in faceoffs, depending on what side of the ice it is. He said that, you know, their internal analytics group ran the numbers and found out that, you know, these guys are better on their strong side. So instead of having Matthews take every single faceoff on that line, they're alternating depending what side of the ice it is. So it's a kind of like a baby step for Nylander to maybe grow into a center role. You know, it's kind of a catch 22 though, right? Because those guys have such amazing chemistry already. It's like, you don't really want to mess that up, and they have, you know, they love playing with each other. But, you know, if Bozak isn't around, you know, next fall, you know, Kadri's definitely number two. Matthews is number one. And, you know, maybe Nylander centers another scoring line. We'll see. But there's so much, you know, we don't know that's going to shake out between now and then. But I wouldn't rule out Nylander becoming a centerman at some point in his career. I would be shocked if it happened this year.
Yeah, I would think that it would have to take some kind of a serious injury to someone. And I don't even want to entertain that thought right now anyways. By the way, speaking of that prospect pool, it was an interesting tweet yesterday by Michael Tracos pointing it out that, you know, Brandon Leipzig yesterday is playing on the second power play unit. He's a guy that the Leafs didn't even want to protect. Ends up going over there. He makes a pretty pass yesterday that results in a goal. And you're thinking, damn, they got so many guys down in the Marlies right now that it was no phase that they ended up losing this guy. So, yeah, I think everyone's still very excited for this team, but they're also very excited for the amount of depth that they do have. By the way, what did you think about Vegas last night? Because it was pretty much unanimously received as an excellent pregame ceremony by them. I thought that the way that they addressed the first responders, Derek Englund's speech, the fact that he scored that goal was ridiculous. But Ben and I have been kind of kicking around. Maybe they're not. I know they've played the Coyotes twice, but maybe they're not going to be as horrible as maybe we thought they were going to be in the first place.
No, I don't think they're going to be horrible. I'd be shocked if they're a playoff team. But
I don't think so yet.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they're fourth or fifth last overall, which is fine for an expansion team, and an expansion team that, quite frankly, would be fine finishing low and getting more draft picks. I mean, that's been their MO since day one. But it was a special night, and I'm really happy that they're off to the start that they are. I think it's really, it's small potatoes, but it's done a little bit to help that community. And just every little detail that they pulled off last night, the one that stuck out to me, one, Englund's speech was fantastic. The guy, when he was developing, played some time with the Wranglers there, and his kids were born there and stuff like that. So he's got a real legitimate ties to that community. But the other thing was the fact that they did away completely with advertising on the boards and just had Vegas Strong and on the boards, and that's it. And you got to go back to watch some of those ESPN classic hockey games to remember a time when there was no advertising on boards. But just like all class from the top down, and it wasn't just that night, right? Like, those players have been out in the community meeting with victims' families and victims themselves, and really trying to do what little they can to bring smiles to people's faces in just an awful, awful tragedy.
Yeah, that's horrible. But yeah, it's hard to imagine a franchise becoming more a part of the community as quickly as that franchise has. And of course, the Maple Leafs go there on New Year's Eve. Like, how hard are you angling for that gig, that road trip?
Oh, you've been in meetings. Yeah, I've been angling hard. I've made about three or four pitches already.
Would you like to share those pitches now? We can grade them for you.
It's down to me and one other guy, but the other guy is favored for sure.
Oh! I would love this. Yeah, okay.
You won't name names?
I won't name names.
All right, so we'll go through the Rolodex. Yeah. Dan Robson.
Chris Johnson. Is it Chris? They're choosing between you and Chris, eh? Wow.
No comment.
First, like, listen, Chris, you just got hockey night. You could give Luke this. Like, that seems only fair.
Why do we only need one writer down there? We probably need a whole horde of them.
Use this part as, you can clip Ben's that question out for you when you go to your next pitch meeting.
Yeah. I think they should send two of us. Then we could have fun together. But
oh, yeah, man. I think there's a ton of Leaf fans, obviously, that are going to make that trip. It's going, we haven't, it's just one home game now. But I don't know if that's overblown, that whole, hey, they're going to have this incredible home ice advantage because teams coming in there on road trips are going to let loose. Hey,
that is the most overblown thing
there's
ever.
Do you think it's any more than going to New York City, right? Like, there's plenty to do, or teams coming to Toronto. Like, it's everywhere. It's very few and far between the Winnipegs of the world.
Yeah. If you want to get into trouble, if you're, a young athlete with millions of dollars to spend, you want to have fun, you can do it in most NHL cities, I'd say.
Not to mention, if you're
even Winnipeg.
If you're in Canada, you're such a bigger celebrity that if you really wanted to rack it up and you wanted to do something, Toronto would be the number one place. Like, if you wanted to go to a downtown Toronto and get into any type of situation you wanted to, you pulled out your NHL player card, I think that you're good to go. You can basically get in wherever you want. You can do whatever you want. You could probably meet most people.
Like your NHLPA membership card?
Yeah, you're in. You just tell people who you are and you're in. You're gonna be fine. I don't think it matters. It probably matters more here than it does in Las Vegas in terms of how you could get into trouble. By the way, before we let you go, got to talk a little bit about the Montreal Canadiens because they got four goals in four games. They're peppering the net, though. Like, I think they're averaging close to 40 shots a game. So is there really even a reason to be concerned right now? I feel like they're due to break through. They look like a different team than they did last year.
I'd still be a little bit concerned just because, I know they got Jonathan Duran and Max Pacioretty can find a back of the net, but you need some pure finishers in this league. And, you know, that's why the Leafs are off to such a hot start. And I just really question the Canadians if they have enough guys that can score. And, Carey Price is just, I just think back to the playoff series that they lost at the end of last year and how little goal support he had. And he obviously had enough faith to re-sign there, but he's got to be getting frustrated with the lack of goal support because they need guys who can just finish and get the puck in. I mean, I see them as in tough this year. I don't think they're going to be their record's going to be as bad as they've started off here right now. But I see them more as a bubble team that's going to be battling to stay relevant in that conference and be, in the conversation for a wild card. They might get it, they might not. I really wonder how their defense are going to be able to, the scoring's one thing, but I think their defense is a bit worse off than last year, too.
It's weird. I know this is a bit hot takey, but Ben and I were talking about this last night when we were discussing the Habs. That Saturday night game already this early in the season, if you go and you play the Leafs and they score, they run up the score on you and you're not able to respond with any, I can't help but that starts to put a little bit of the flame to the feet of Mark Bergevin.
Oh, yeah. I think he's, three, four games in. I don't know if your GM's getting fired, but
there just might be a little bit more added attention.
He entered the season on one of the hottest seats, right?
Yeah.
I think it's like him and maybe Gus Snow just with the Tavares thing hanging over his head. But, yeah, Bergevin made so many moves this summer and so many moves that not everyone was on board with. So, he's already played the fire the coach card. And, I think things will get tense quickly if they don't turn it around soon. I'm thrilled that I'm actually going to be at that game against the Leafs. So the Leafs, and they haven't beat that. I forget what the
14th number is. Straight.
14th straight. Yeah, it's insane. So there's going to be it's for an early season game. There's going to be a lot riding on that one.
Yeah, you'll be at that game. You'll also be in Vegas. I believe in you, Luke. Yeah.
We believe in you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for the vote of support.
All right, there's Luke Fox. No problem.